basically, what we want to do with this session is kind of try and pull together some of the threads from some of the fantastic discussions that have been going on here over the past couple of days. I'd like to thank people straight away for the fantastic input to the event through the paper's presentations and discussions, which have lent a great sense of vibrancy, I feel, a sense of vibrancy that hopefully we can now go on and do something interesting with. Now, as part and parcel of getting that discussion of where next going, we've assembled a ginger group of experts who are going to address the topic of where next for critical governance. Now, there are two levels to this as I see it, and of course there may be more, but the one level is clearly the sort of intellectual thrust of the thing, and what are you trying to do intellectually? And the other dimension of it is then what do you do pragmatically and institutionally with it, if anything? And so I've asked our four speakers to think about these issues as they see fit. We have a diverse group of people. Professor Martin Parker from Industrial Relations and Organisational Behaviour, who's a critical management thinker. Helen Sullivan, Professor of Government and Society at the University of Birmingham. David Imbrosio, who is Professor of Urban Political Economy at the University of Louisville. And, of course, Nancy Fraser, our keynote speaker and critical theorist. And that's the order in which we're going to proceed, with each speaker having a few minutes to set the discussion going, and then we will take some contributions from the floor.
I've been lucky enough over the last 3 months to work here at Warwick Business School. Oh, yes. Leading business school, one of the top business schools in Europe, you might think. Somewhere that generates four-star articles, as if they were confetti. And you're hub for business for pleasure. And part, of course, of Warwick University Limited, which for quite a few generations now has been purveying high-class education to technocrats in the West Midlands. Doing a fine job of it, too. So we're in the heart of the beast, and I want to kind of come back to that. This is one of the places where forms of global managerialism are being reproduced. But yet, strangely, there seems to be a bunch of people who are allowed, indeed, even encouraged, as long as it gets published in the four-star articles and so on, to do all this weird and critical stuff. So I thought I might say a few things. They're kind of informed, I suppose, by the fact that I'm supposed to be something to do with critical management studies. But I wanted to kind of, open up a couple of questions for what I see to be the relationship between whatever critical management studies is and critical social policy of some description. Yeah? So I guess one of the first things I'd want to ask is about we, because whenever you're invited to talk about the future of something, of course you're necessarily invoking some sort of we. And the relevant thing to ask of the we here, I suspect, is what are we against? Because it seems to me that there's a whole bunch of terms that have been used over the last couple of days. And it suggests that the master term is neoliberalism. I'm not quite sure what that means. Subordinate or other terms might be capitalism, hegemony, subjectivation, modernism, statification, authoritarian high modernism. That's probably a very bad one, I think, isn't it? managerialism, commodification, soft power, coercion light. Some of these terms are from Jonathan's talk earlier. Marketisation, post-bureaucracy, technocracy, and, of course, governmentalisation. So whatever those things are, collectively or individually, I assume that we are against them. Then we might ask, I suppose, how we're going to be against those things. And I'm going to suggest there are three broad alternatives for how we might be against we, whoever we are. One of the things that you might do, I suppose, is describe the ways in which those various terms become inscribed within the everyday, whether in institutions or lives. So a whole bunch of ways in which the capillaries of soft and hard and institutionalised power structure the ways that people can do things and think about themselves. That descriptive job, of course, is often augmented or sometimes entirely covered up by a kind of theorisation of why these things are happening, why a whole bunch of these terms seem to be relevant in terms of the way that we look at the world now. And then we can, of course, add there a bunch of relevant theorists: Zizek, Gramsci, Marx, Foucault, Laclau, and here, Bevere, Fraser, and Crouch, all as attempts to theorise whatever the thing is that we're against. The problem I have, or one of the problems I have, is with a kind of, an overwhelming sense that in both the description and the theorisation of all these different sorts of terms, that there is an increasing lack of space for imagining alternatives and for performing what I want to suggest is, I think, a rather more important task, which is that of thinking about alternatives, rather than simply looking at what's now and throwing up our hands in that Dad's Army kind of way and going, we're all doomed, to think about what other things might happen. And I think some of this involves, and I'm going to pervert his work here, but some of the ideas from James Scott's of seeing like a state, yeah? One of the things that seems to be happening in quite a lot of these discourses, shall we say, is that we are seeing a variety of carceral formations at both the macro and micro level, and consequently blinding ourselves to the possibility that there might be all sorts of other stuff happening elsewhere. When Stefan Bohm asked Colin Crouch at the first session why he was so pessimistic, asking him to recognise there was lots of other stuff going on too, I think that's an example of the kind of call that I'd like to see happening. In other words, an interrogation of what isn't neoliberalism, what isn't capitalism, what isn't hegemony, subjectivation, and so on. And there are, I think, lots of alternatives, lots of things that we could be for, that we could be for quite enthusiastically. An optimism of the intellect and of the will would then be the kind of formulation I'd want to go for. So communes, cooperatives, local exchange trading systems, slow food, a whole bunch of different resistance movements and religious movements too, anarchist, feminist, environmentalist and localist forms of thought, autonomism, socialism, Marxism, intentional communities, and even governance conferences taking place within the heart of the beast as an example of precisely the kind of spaces that already seem to exist. Thank you very much.
Martin, thank you very much indeed.
Okay, Helen.
Okay, do you want to stand up or not?
This feels better stand
up. Does it feel better stand up? I'll tell you what, I'll stand up then. All right. Might as well sit down. I suppose for me, the hallmarks of a successful event are whether I've been made to think, whether somebody's made me cross, and whether I've laughed a lot. And each of those things has happened over the last 2 days. So, from that point of view, this feels like a successful event. In terms of how one might reproduce such an event and what one might do perhaps more of, differently, better, I suppose there's a few things that I'd want to say. This is a critical governance conference, and I observed lots of critique in my field, which is, you know, loosely how states govern through networks, hierarchies, markets. I've heard people talk about the failure of networks to deliver. I've heard people talk about hierarchies not working, and I've heard people talking about hierarchies working perfectly well. So there seems to be lots of critique coming from different places and spaces, not necessarily critique that seems to communicate terribly well to other critiques. And for the most part, critique that's not really being resolved or even engaged with particularly. So I think there's something for me about how we move from the lots of different critical positions that we hold into a more active engagement of those positions with each other, accepting that there are a multiplicity of perspectives. And I think we've not heard a multiplicity of perspectives. We've heard lots of critiques, but I'm not sure we've heard lots of perspectives. I want to pick up on something that Martin said, and because I agree, I think thinking about what we're for rather than simply thinking about what we're against is really important. And again, there have been a number of people who've asked us to think about addressing the causes, not the symptoms. But relatively few people, although there have been some attempts, have proposed alternative strategies. And I think as part of our engagement with different critical positions, it seems to be very important that, one of the things we want to do is to generate alternative strategies, whether in the way that Martin suggests or not. One of the things I'm particularly interested in, given that I do a lot of work at the local level, I do a lot of work with, state actors, is the messy middle, is the stuff about public managers and how public managers are responding to or even are aware of the kind of stuff that, we talk about, write about, attempt to engage them with. And Tim Brighouse, who's a, an elder statesman of, education, was talking very much about the UK context and the prospect of, public service reforms. And he characterised people in four ways. He talked about those public servants who had their head in the sand and were just denying that anything terrible was happening. Those who were shouting at the waves and just, you know, wanting it to, go back. Those people who were actually rubbing their hands with glee because this crisis had presented them with an opportunity to do things they'd never been allowed to do before. And the bulk of whom were, really the sort of resigned acceptors, the people who were trying to make the best of it. And I think one of the things I've heard in this conference is a lot of the explicit and implicit criticism of people who want to make the best of things or feel they have to make the best of things. And actually, it's those people I'm really interested in. I'm also interested in people who are outside the system. But for me, I think one of the things that perhaps we've been, in some of the things that I've heard, too quick to dismiss is the possibility of subverting within the existing systems. So, yes, we need to talk about alternative strategies, but they're not just alternative strategies out with neoliberalism, but it's about also surviving and possibly thriving within. A couple of other things I want to say, one of which is about evidence, and linked to that there's something about method. I've been part of and listening to lots of fascinating conversations which move very quickly from theory to a case or some data. I've sometimes been quite bewildered about how theory has been translated into design strategies for collecting data. I think we really need a stronger evidence base than I've heard in this conference, and I'd be very interested in future conferences being more, at least in part, methodologically focused. And my, by that I mean how we design methods rather than the kinds of methods we use. And then I just want to finish by talking about who we think we're speaking to and who's not present and what's not being present at this conference. And if I may, Jonathan, I just want to pick up on something I heard you say yesterday in response to, Nancy's point about the lack of gender and the discussion of gender. And one of the things that you said in response to that was we didn't get anybody coming to us with papers about gender. And I accept that that's an issue, but I suppose that, begs the question for me about why that is. Because these discussions are happening. You know, critical governance has not just started now. This stuff has been going on for a while in different places and spaces and with different people. And it feels to me that perhaps we need to think a bit more critically about how we want to have the conversations we want to have, who we want to be present, and, how we can enable those people to be present.
Thank you very much, Helen. Okay, straight on to David.
Yes, well, the first thing that struck me is we didn't talk to one another, but I'm going to say a lot of the same things that both Helen and Martin have said, which I guess maybe says something for the fact that we are all on the same page to a certain extent on, this. My, so some of the things are going to be redundant, but I'm going to maybe start with something that's not redundant, and that is... well, actually, Martin did mention this concept of, neoliberalism, and, I want to say two things about that. The first one's just quick, and the second one is more substantive. The first one is I think sometimes in the critique of neoliberalism, we need to remember that old-fashioned liberalism wasn't that great either, that it's had a lot of problems in terms of a lot of normative problems, being statist and things like that. But related to that, when the critique of neoliberalism or capitalism or whatever it is, I really think that we need to begin to think about, okay, what else? What else is there? What else is going, if we have problems with neoliberalism, And this gets to this point about, which I'll come back to, what not only just what we're against, but what we're for. If we have problems with capitalism, neoliberalism, what is going to get us all the same values that we, or not the same values, but the values that we care about? See, for example, democracy, equality, certain levels of efficiency, things like that. A lot of the other institutional alternatives, welfare state liberalism, state socialism, there's some problems with that. So we need to begin to think about, whenever I hear someone talking about neoliberalism, hear about someone talking about capitalism, I want to know, compared to what? What are the ideas for essentially institutional design, developing alternative strategies, alternative institutions, things in that nature. So related to this is also the point that I think we need to be careful and thorough in our critiques, but I think we need to get beyond critique to construction, that is, to building something new, in particular how we build good society, moving from critique to institutional design. I already mentioned the point about more focus on not only what we don't like, but also what we like, or not only what we're for. Again, moving beyond critique. I heard in one talk the distinction between diagnosis and prescription. I think that my view, and this is controversial, is that, or might be controversial, that we need we have a pretty good idea about what the diagnosis is, and we kind of know what the problems are we're trying to solve, and so sort of stop. Or move beyond just diagnosing the problems and move toward more toward prescription about how to fix them. Related to that, to a certain extent, is that what we need is not just this term gets used a lot, resistance. We want to resist neoliberalism. We want to resist. Not we, I'm not speaking for all of you, I do, but some of you might not. And to me, that becomes a vague term which really often doesn't add up to something. I think what we need is not only resistance, but resistance toward building something new. Resistance that's directive, resistance that is about. So that requires us knowing what we're for and what we're trying to build in its place as opposed to just tearing down what exists. And then I think a big part of a lot of work needs to be done about how all this can be politically feasible, too, about how you can build the right kind of political coalition, about who might be interested. And I think we need to move, and I haven't really thought through this completely, well, certainly not completely, but maybe even that much. We need to get out of, at least in the United States, which is really all I know about, we need to get out of the traditional left-right divide, the traditional liberal-conservative divide, because I think that's just a dead end politically. We need to think of new ways of imagining different kinds of coalitions that are both right and left at the same time, that are that really begin to take us in a new direction around a set of institutional alternatives to the things that we don't like.
Thank you very much, David. And Nancy.
Great. Well, as Jonathan said in introducing me last night, I'm the interloper here, and I can't tell you anything about what I think critical governance studies should be doing. I'm encountering it literally for the first time. I've learned a huge amount, and it's definitely something I intend to keep following, and I hope to remain in contact and conversation with many of you. I think what I would like to do here is actually, if it's not inappropriate, enter a kind of word of dissent. I would suggest, I'm uncomfortable by this talk of getting beyond critique to construction, prescription, feasible politics, and I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of getting beyond left and right. So let me just say a little bit about why.
Did I say anything you did agree with?
I don't mean to single you out, but anyway, it gives me a kind of way to launch into my own points here. I think I can't say very much about governance beyond just reiterating that I've been learning from you quite a lot about how to think about this and even about what the concept is. But I might be able to say something about critique. And I just want to start by evoking very briefly the tradition with which I identify, which is that of critical social theory. And I think of this in a sort of neo-Hegelian way, in which, from which one cannot separate one's sort of account of a sort of historically reflexive diagnostic picture of the sources and mechanisms of domination and injustice in society, an account of the characteristic forms of tension, conflict, and struggle in the society, and an account, therefore, grounded in this sort of picture, this historically informed picture of the present, of what might be the prospects for emancipatory social transformation. I don't believe that prescription is separate from diagnosis, and I think it has to grow out of it. So, having said that, maybe I could mention then what I think of as sort of four genres of critique in general, and forgive me if I speak abstractly, it's an occupational deformation of a philosophical training, but I've heard versions of these four strands of critique in the various sessions that I've been in. So the first one is crisis critique, and that is really aimed at trying to disclose deep structural tensions, contradictory imperatives in society that generate, right, crisis-prone, destabilizing the difficulties that systems have in reproducing themselves in a sort of stable, ongoing way. And I think this whole question of crisis of governance that we've talked about, crisis of capitalism, this whole idea of crisis is extremely important. There are many different ways to think about it, but it's a very important genre of critique. Then I would mention three, that this crisis critique in and of itself isn't necessarily a normative critique. It's just really about the difficulties and blocks in reproducing something. But the other three genres of critique are normative. So there is a kind of injustice critique, and I think this does speak to the other panelists here who, you know, want to think about the question of what we're for. I would suggest the best way to think about this, in my opinion, is to think negatively, not positively. That is to think that what we're for is overcoming injustice, overcoming domination, overcoming oppression, overcoming forms of undemocratic governance, and so on, which is not yet the same thing as being able to say in a positive way exactly what justice means or what, you know, what the sort of good is. It seems to me that one very important strand of critique is that is aimed at disclosing how existing forms, let us say, of governance or whatever it is one is studying, right, differentially impact different groups of people in ways that could be considered unfair or unjust. Then I've heard, and I've heard this kind of critique in many of the sessions I've attended, then I would also mention what you could call democracy critique. I've heard, even apart from differential impact, right, there's the whole question of whether governance is democratic, authoritarian, top-down, participatory, et cetera, this seems to be also a very important genre or strand of critique. And then the last one, this may be the hardest one to talk about or even to justify, but I believe it's very important nonetheless, is what I would call a grammar of life critique. And here we're looking not simply at fairness, unfairness, democracy, authoritarianism, but something about how the systems that we live in actually and qualitatively construct our relations to one another, our relations to ourselves, our relations to nature in ways that may not produce the most desirable, happy, or authentic, for want of a better word, forms of living. And as I say, I think this is the hardest thing to do because it can lapse into a certain kind of romanticism or whatever, but I think that critical theory, at least in the worlds that I inhabit, has been too nervous about this kind of critique. And it used to be, you know, critique of reification or alienation critique, whatever. I think it's important to find ways to recover this tradition of talking about the grammar of life in our societies, even though it's not clear to me, I confess, you know, how to ground such a critique philosophically without lapsing into some sort of philosophy of human nature that would be hard to justify. But it's a plea for thinking about how not to drop that strand of critique.
Okay, thank you very much, Nancy.